my body.
Call me.
Your sister, your girlfriend. One in six women is a victim of sexual assault. Now think about your father, your brother, your best friend. Men are victims too. Rape can happen to anyone. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, encouraging you to call the National Sexual Assault Hotline to learn how to support someone you love. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Good evening, you're listening to Garage Radio. My name's Joe, and well, hope you're having a good night and a great start to your week. Got a lot of great music lined up for you tonight, so hey, make sure you stick around. I've got a new track from a group known as Worthy Kids on the way, but we'll be starting tonight off with a classic, Mr. Fats Domino with his song Blue Monday. Keep it tuned in here, Garage Radio. Kids, the collaborative effort of an artist known as Ian Worthington, internet artist and animator, also writes some amazing music there. That was his track Stone Jars. You're listening to Garage Radio. My name's Joe. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're having a good night. Coming up, I got a classic track from Plumtree on the way. We'll be also taking a listen to a song by artist Matt Berry, a British actor and comedian best known for his roles on the British sitcom The IT Crowd, as well as the TV series To What We Do in the Shadows, where he plays Laszlo. Yes, Mr. Berry is also quite a prolific musician himself, so take a listen to one of his songs. But up next, keep it in a classic punk rock feel, here is The Ramones with Sheena Is a Punk Rocker. Keep it tuned in here, Garage Radio. Welcome back, Garage Radio. We just heard a classic track from the 90s group Plum Tree, just really giving that grungy kind of vibes. A little earlier, we were listening to the artist Matt Berry, a British actor best known for, well, his comedy roles. He also produces music himself and as well, a really talented artist. Really enjoyed his song there called Why on Fire. That was a collaboration effort with fellow British artist Eric D. Johnson. All right, you're listening to Garage Radio. My name's Joe, and while going through the archives here, I've got a song from the Archers of Loaf. Haven't heard them in a good while, so stick around for that. Also got a classic track from Humble Pie, but lately I've been feeling a little dark with winter setting in here. I've been wanting to sort of get into the metal. We'll do something kind of soft, kind of neoclassical, as we'll call it. Here is Death with their song, The Voice of the Soul.
Days in the hole.
Lord, have mercy.
Oh, yeah.
Come on in, man.
That's it.
Stuck a pin in your backbone, spoke you down from there. All I ever wanted was to be your spine. Lost your friction and you slid for a mile. Overdone, overdrive, overlive, override. You're not the one who let me down, but thanks for offering. Not a voice and I'm not around. Thanks for picking it. Oh,
Creatures of Loaf with their song Web in Front. It has been a good while since I've heard some Archers of Loaf. Hey, my name's Joe, and this has been Garage Radio. Hope you like the music I've been playing. I got a lot more to come, so make sure you stick around. We'll be returning to the music right after these quick messages. Stay tuned, Garage Radio.
It's just insane. We have the most insane system of health insurance on the planet. We're the only industrialized country, the only developed country that in which the citizens of the country can go bankrupt or lose their homes or die because they don't have coverage or they get their policies canceled.
That's Wendell Potter, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Wendell Potter on health insurance, an insane system. The murder of United Healthcare CEO on a Midtown Manhattan street unleashed, the New York Times reported, a torrent of morbid glee from patients and others who say they have had negative experiences with health insurance companies at some of the hardest times of their lives. Some of the comments were, thoughts and deductibles to the family. Another one said, unfortunately, my condolences are out of network. The dark commentary highlighted deep anger over the state of health insurance. Millions simply can't afford it and go without. And many who are on some plan have such inadequate coverage and high deductibles that they can't afford to pay for anything. The answer, Ralph Nader says, is single payer. Everybody in, nobody out. That would bring down prices. But the handful of corporations who monopolize the health insurance industry don't want that. Why? That would cut into their profits. So the insanity continues. Our guest today is Wendell Potter. He was a former Cigna public relations executive, and today he's an outspoken critic of the health insurance industry. This classic from the AR archives is even more relevant today than it was when it was originally recorded over a decade ago. Wendell Potter spoke at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon.
I think I'll begin by just answering a question that I'm often asked when I am speaking to groups, and that is, why did you do what you did? Why don't more people do what you did? And what led you to do what you decided to do? There was no one thing that led me to do this. It was a culmination of a number of things. I had a wonderful career in the health insurance industry. I've actually had two careers. I was a journalist, and I had a very good career as a journalist. I was a reporter initially in Memphis and Nashville, and then finally in Washington, and I covered Congress and the White House and the Supreme Court for a few years. But I decided to go into PR, first in a political campaign. I was a press secretary for a guy who ran for governor of Tennessee. And from there, my PR career just meandered, and it took me from one place to another, and I eventually wound up working for a big for-profit health insurance company, Humana, based in Louisville, Kentucky. At that time, Humana was largely known as a hospital company, and I was hired to help promote and defend and be a spokesperson for the hospitals that the company owned. After doing that for 4 years, I was recruited to Hartford, Connecticut, to support Cigna's healthcare operations. Cigna at that time was a very large multi-line insurance company. It had property and casualty division, a financial services division, and a reinsurance division, and I was hired to help raise the awareness of Cigna as a health insurance company. Insurers were beginning to catch on to the fact that a lot of money could be made in health insurance. When I worked at Humana, Humana decided to get rid of its hospitals because the executives and shareholders thought that they could make more money if they focused on managed care and health insurance. So they spun the hospitals off to a different company and focused on managed care. And I became the chief spokesperson for Humana and was doing that when I was recruited to Cigna. And Cigna likewise saw that there was a lot of money to be made in health insurance and got rid of its property and casualty division and the other divisions that shareholders felt were not as profitable as health insurance could be. So Aetna did the same thing. Aetna's mix of businesses was very similar to Cigna's during that time, and Aetna did exactly the same thing. It got rid of those other divisions so it could focus on making money on health insurance. When I joined those companies, I thought that managed care was truly a good way to provide finance health care in this country, and I still think that as a concept, it's not bad. We have some still very good, I think, solid and reputable players in the managed care space. Some people might disagree, but I think the Kaiser model is one that has worked pretty well for a lot of people, and here in the Pacific Northwest and some other parts of the country, like the northeastern states, where primarily there have been nonprofit organizations that have provided health insurance. What really happened was back about the time that I was working for Humana. Both Humana and Cigna, by the way, are for-profit companies, as you probably know. They're two of seven very large for-profit companies that now dominate the health insurance industry, and I work for two of them. Now, one out of every three Americans is enrolled, if you're insured, in some kind of a benefit plan sponsored by or offered by one of these seven big companies. The for-profit companies began to dominate in the years following the collapse or the failure of the Clinton health care plan. And we saw the conversion of a lot of nonprofit Blue Cross plans to for-profit status. And we saw a consolidation in the industry. And now we have a lot of the Blue Cross plans around the country are owned by this big, gigantic company called WellPoint. So we've seen enormous change in the industry. My point is that initially, the concept of managed care was again, something that worked pretty well for a lot of folks. But when these companies saw that they could make a lot of money on managed care, that's when things started getting, our healthcare system took a turn for the significantly for the worse. One of the things that led me to finally decide that I was not in the right business, I was growing increasingly uncomfortable being a spokesman for an industry that was pushing more and more of us into so-called consumer-driven plans. You may have heard the term, it's a kind of a euphemism for plans that have very high deductibles. And what they are doing is pushing more and more of us into these kinds of plans that require us to pay a lot more money out of our own pockets for care, even if we have insurance. We're paying premiums every month, often as much as we have in the past, but we're getting far less value for it. Often they shrink the benefits or they eliminate benefits, and they make us pay a lot more out of our own pockets. WellPoint has a plan in Maine that is requiring people to pay $30,000 out of their pockets before the insurance will pay a dime. That is the trend, and I was growing increasingly uncomfortable being a spokesman for these kinds of plans. They're extremely profitable for health insurance companies, and that is one reason why these companies have recorded record profits. When I was working for Cigna for 10 years, I handled financial communications. I was the person who explained to reporters who called every time the company announced earnings how the company made its money and whether or not it met Wall Street's expectations. That is the most important thing to these companies, is whether or not you're going to meet Wall Street's expectations for profit. And if you don't, your stock price will go down. And when that happens, if you're an executive, so will your stock options. And you do not want that to happen. So the first priority is always to meet Wall Street's expectations. You're financially invested in this. And the CEOs, for example, at Cigna, the CEO, 90% of his salary is at what they call at risk. And it's determining whether or not the company performs to Wall Street's satisfaction. And if he doesn't, he doesn't get as much. But if he does, he makes an enormous amount of money, millions and millions of dollars every year. I was worried about these plans, and I did not believe, as I was having to say, that this was the new silver bullet to get more people covered and to provide adequate coverage. What I really was learning was that it is a primary reason why we now have not only 51 million people who are uninsured. We have at least half that many, if not more, 25 million as estimated by the Commonwealth Fund, who are underinsured. They're paying premiums, but they have plans that are so inadequate that if they do get sick, they're going to be on the hook to pay so much out of their own pockets that people are still losing their jobs or filing bankruptcy, losing their homes because they simply cannot make the out-of-pocket expenses that's required of them. If you consider that the median household income in this country is still just roughly around $50,000, and the average cost of a family health insurance premium that is purchased through the workplace is about $13,500. If you're having to pay premiums and then a lot of money out of your own pocket, that's not very good value in my book. And but the other thing that I didn't really relish and didn't want to be a part of was helping to defeat health care reform. When I worked for Humana and then transitioned to Cigna, it was in 1993, and that was the year that the Clinton health care reform was being debated in Congress. And I played a significant role in helping to defeat that plan. My peers at other companies and I would meet in Washington on a regular basis to develop PR strategies to try to turn people away, to scare people into thinking that this the Clinton plan was a government takeover of the health care system, would lead to much higher taxes, would lead to people not having the kind of coverage that they had in the past and that they valued. So it was a very successful fear-mongering campaign. Fear-mongering is at the core of a lot of these companies' PR strategies. They know that if they can scare people, they can scare them away from reform. And we saw that happening over the past year. And we saw it happening also during the campaigns that led up to the midterm elections. I didn't want to be a part of that again because I knew that we had to do something to try to reform our healthcare system because private insurance companies had not been able to do what they promised to do when the Clinton plan failed. When the Clinton plan failed, the private insurers were saying, give us a chance. Let the free market system help solve the problems in our healthcare system, and we can be there to bringing solutions to the table, to use the term that they've used. Unfortunately, what happened was just the opposite of bringing solutions to the table. It created even more problems. We've seen a steady growth in the number of people who are uninsured and a rapidly growing number of people who are underinsured. And we've seen benefits shrink. And we've seen they have not been able to control medical inflation. So we've got a problem that is a healthcare system that's even in worse crisis than it was in 1993. But what the health insurance industry had to do was to convince people that the healthcare crisis was not that big of a deal after all, that millions of people still have insurance, they like their insurance, so let's not do anything that might cause people to lose their insurance. And they made people afraid that healthcare reform would result in their possibly losing the insurance that they have and that they value. They were very much involved in the disruption of town hall meetings when Democratic members of Congress were having the town hall meetings all across the country, and you may recall and may have even been to some of the town hall meetings at which people who had been persuaded to be opposed to health care reform came to these meetings to disrupt them, not to listen, not to ask questions, but to disrupt them. And a lot of insurance money, your premium dollars, by the way, have financed a lot of these disruptions. I spoke at one town hall meeting in New Jersey, sponsored by Congressman Bill Pascrell in central New Jersey, and he had invited me to speak because it was not too long after I had given my testimony before one of the House panels that he was on, and I was giving a talk sort of like this. I was trying to explain how big insurance companies have been so successful in past years in manipulating public opinion to influence public policy. That's the ultimate objective. It was hard to be heard over the chaos because the Tea Party folks were trying to drown out the speakers, and the folks who were there supporting health care reform were trying to show support for the speakers, so it was just chaos. Afterwards, a woman came up, and I could tell on which side she was on by the sign that she was carrying. It was health care reform, tort reform now, and tort reform is is something that the health insurance industry and big business has led us to think is a cure-all for the problems of our healthcare system. It certainly is not. There are some things undoubtedly that probably could be done to improve the tort system and to help improve or address medical malpractice and things of that nature. But it's a diversionary tactic that the insurance industry and others have used to try to get the focus away from some of the real problems in our healthcare system that have been caused by the health insurance industry. But anyway, she was carrying this sign, and I knew that she had been persuaded to think in a certain way. And she said, "No one paid me to be here tonight." And I said, "Ma'am, I know that no one paid you to be here. You didn't get a dime, but a lot of money went into getting you here tonight. And a lot of your premium dollars in this audience and that audience, went into getting those people there to not only make them fearful of healthcare reform, but to be a part of the anger mongering. It's not just fear mongering, it's anger mongering, to get people so worked up, so angry at members of Congress that they will vote against their own self-interest, as we saw happen during the past midterm election. So I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't want to be part of yet another effort to defeat reform. And I decided that I was going to leave before I had to be intimately involved in that and playing an active role in defeating reform this time. But this was in 2007, and there were a few things that happened in that particular year that really led me to know that I was not doing the right thing. I was not engaged in right livelihood. I am from East Tennessee, a very rural part of the state and a very Republican conservative part of the state in the very northeastern part of Tennessee. I think every one of my relatives are Republicans, and that's just the way and they still are. It's one of the most Republican areas in the country. I was back home visiting my folks, and I picked up the local newspaper. This was in June of 2007, and no, July, and I read an article about a healthcare expedition that was being held across the state line. Kingsport, Tennessee, where I grew up, is just right on the border with Virginia. And this expedition was being held in Wise County, Virginia, which is a few miles up the road in the heart of the coal mining area of southwestern Virginia. Very remote and quite poor. But it said that people would be driving to this expedition from as far away as Ohio and Georgia and South Carolina. And that's a long drive to get to Wise County, Virginia, a very remote town in the southwestern part of the state. I was curious. I was wondering, why would people do this? And the paper said this was the eighth year it was being done, and that more people showed up every year than the year before. And it was being put on by this organization called Remote Area Medical that started in the 80s. It was started by a guy named Stan Brock. If you ever saw a TV show called Animal Kingdom, I think that was Animal Kingdom. He was one of the actors in that. When he left, he had spent a lot of his time in the Amazon area of South America, and he wanted to do something to help those folks. He became very much aware that people who lived in those remote villages did not have good access to care. So he organized this effort to fly doctors from the U.S. to the Amazon to give people care that they wouldn't have otherwise. And he did the same thing. He would eventually take them to countries in Africa. And he's taken a lot of doctors down to Haiti in recent years. But within a few years after starting this, he realized that the need was just as great, if not greater, in this country as some of the places where he was taking these doctors to the Amazon. So most of the expeditions they do in these days are in the United States, and it's not just in remote areas anymore. One of the biggest is now in Los Angeles. They've been doing it for 2 years, stretches over 8 days, and thousands of people come to get free care. One of the things I found out when I got there was that most of these folks work. They're not unemployed. They're not shirking their individual responsibility. They would like to have coverage, but for whatever reason, they can't have it. They work for small businesses that don't offer benefits, which is the growing trend in this country. Fewer than half of small businesses now offer health care benefits. A lot of those folks couldn't get insurance at any price because they had pre-existing conditions. In our healthcare system now, the way it's set up, insurance companies will not sell insurance policies to someone who's been sick in the past, and that's been perfectly legal. And also knew from what I had done at Cigna, the companies, the insurance companies will actually dump the sick. They will cancel policies when people get sick. And then that's been perfectly legal as well, too. So a lot of these folks were in, for one reason or another, they did not have coverage. I did find out, though, that of those, there were a lot of people there who did have coverage. But many of them were in these kinds of plans I mentioned earlier, these plans with such high deductibles that they might as well not be covered. They couldn't afford to go to the doctor. And consequently, they stopped going. They're getting sicker. A lot of folks don't pick up their medications that are prescribed for them. More and more don't have dental benefits or vision benefits. One of the greatest needs is in all of these expeditions is for dental care. People just can't afford to go to the dentist. And anyhow, when I borrowed my dad's car and drove up there and I walked through the fairground gates, it was more than I ever imagined. Yes, there were thousands of people who were there. And I found out that many of them had driven the night before and had spent the night in the parking lot in their cars or their pickup trucks, or they camped out. And it was raining. It was summer, but it was a kind of a cold rain that was falling in the mountains there. They had gotten up before dawn and stand in a very long line to get a number to be able to get inside the fairground gates. And once they were inside, they had to stand in long lines once again to get care that was being delivered. I saw when I got there it was being delivered in barns and animal stalls that other volunteers had come just days before to scrub down so that doctors could have somewhat of a sterile place to, if not sterile, at least somewhat clean, to provide the care that these people needed. It wasn't just blood pressure checks, folks. There were doctors there who were removing skin cancers, who were doing colonoscopies, who were mammographies, and you name it. They were doing all kinds of outpatient kinds of treatments, and I could tell that a lot of those folks undoubtedly were people that I could have grown up with in East Tennessee, and undoubtedly there were people from East Tennessee who were there. They could have been people that could have been neighbors of mine, if not relatives. And it was the first time that I had really come face to face with faces of real people who were part of that, what is now 51 million people without insurance. In my job at Cigna, I dealt in numbers, as I mentioned before. I explained how much money the company made and how much in revenues it took in. And I knew, of course, that at that time about 47 million people didn't have insurance. But it was just a number to me. When I got to Wise County, I could no longer just think of it as a number. Those faces haunted me. And I knew that the industry that I worked in was directly responsible in many ways for those people having to stand in long lines and waiting for to be served by doctors who were volunteering their times to provide that care at animal stalls and barns. I made a commitment to myself that day that I would soon find some other way to make a living. I didn't know what it would be, but I just knew I didn't want to do that very much longer. But it took me some time to process that. 2 weeks later, back at the job in Philadelphia, I had to go to a meeting in Connecticut, and I was going to be flying on the corporate jet, which I did often. And I was flying to Connecticut with the CEO. I'd done this many times. I'd flown not just to Connecticut, but to the West Coast many times and all over the country. And I paid more attention this time than I ever had before. And I noticed that on that short flight, we were served lunch by a flight attendant who was an employee of Cigna, paid, again, by your premium dollars. And we were served lunch on gold-rimmed china. And we were given gold-plated flatware to eat it with. And we were sitting in these luxurious leather chairs. And right all around us was polished mahogany and wood. If you get a chance to fly in a corporate jet, I'd do it because it's really the way to travel. It makes first class in a commercial flight, seemed like a cattle car. It was very hard to give that up. And I had taken that for granted, that this was my life. This was something that I had earned. I had earned the ability to fly in a corporate jet to meetings. I was very well paid. It's hard to walk away from a job like that. But that day I thought, maybe because it had been so recently that I had been to Wise County, I realized that people's premium dollars were helping me to fly that way, and that because of the practices of the insurance industry, those folks in Wise County were having to wait in long lines to get care in animal stalls. It just came together for me at that time that this is what is going on in this country, and that the industry that I worked for was more responsible for the intractable problems in our healthcare system than I think any other part of the healthcare system. It has largely, since the industry's become dominated by, again, these seven large for-profit companies that have as their chief objective, their number one objective, is to meet Wall Street's expectations. And they do these things. They dump the sick just so they can make sure they don't have to pay the claims that might keep them from meeting Wall Street's expectations. There was a congressional hearing just before I gave my testimony in the Senate for the first time. This House committee was looking into the practice of rescissions of these companies going back to review a person's application after they've gotten sick. This is a practice in the individual insurance market. Because insurance companies can deny you coverage if you've been sick in the past, a lot of folks lie, or they intentionally leave things out. They can't get insurance otherwise. They know that. I met a guy in San Francisco last year, very wealthy guy. He was an investor. He'd been a serial entrepreneur. He found himself unable to buy insurance at any price because of this. He had been diagnosed with gout at one point in the past, and he had mentioned that on his application, and he could not get insurance for being treated for gout. So his wife, who didn't have to work, had to go back to work for a company that offered benefits so that they would have insurance coverage. It's just insane. We have the most insane system of health insurance on the planet. It became very clear to me that a lot of these practices were causing our problems. The story I was getting at, the point I was making, that this congressional hearing found that just looking at three of the big for-profit companies over 5 years, those three companies alone had rescinded or canceled 20,000 policies of very sick people. That's bad enough, but the reason they did was because they were able to save or avoid paying out more than $300 million in claims. So they look at the big ticket items. They look at the people who are the sickest to cancel their policies. And when that happens, can you imagine being this woman that I was, who was testifying, was notified in the midst of being treated for breast cancer that her company was canceling her insurance. And the reason they gave was that she had been treated for acne in the past, but she had not disclosed that. And they decided that she was not being honest in her application, and they gave them justification to cancel her policy, meaning that she was getting no help to pay her bills for her cancer care. She was all on her own. We're the only industrialized country, the only developed country that in which the citizens of the country can go bankrupt to lose their homes or die because they don't have coverage or they get their policies canceled. It's just, it has been a very common and prevalent practice.
You're listening to Wendell Potter on Health Insurance, an Insane System. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977 or go online our website, alternativeradio.org.
I became aware of all of this toward the end of my career as I was going up the corporate ladder and learning more and more about how companies operated and what they did, the lengths they would go to meet Wall Street's expectations. The reason I did this, going back to what I said earlier, why did I leave? What was it other than these things that happened to me in 2007 and just my growing awareness of what these companies did. And I think it's because of who I, where I came from. I came from that part of the world, and I was a journalist. And I think I came to realize toward the end of my career as a PR guy for the insurance industry that I was doing often the exact opposite of what I was doing as a reporter. And I took my job as a reporter very seriously. I wanted to genuinely tell the truth, to report fact, and to help people understand a situation or something that was happening in ways that, that would put it in context or perspective. And I tried to keep bias out of my stories because I was an objective reporter. What I realized that I was doing toward the end of my career was the exact opposite of that. I was trying to confuse people or to avoid telling the whole truth by using, you know, selective information or disclosing selective information or slicing and dicing data in certain ways to prove a point. And even worse, sometimes intentionally misleading people in some of these fear-mongering campaigns. I became very ashamed of what I was doing. I was not at all proud of what I was doing to earn a living. But the other thing I think that was even more important was because when I saw those folks in Wise County who could have been my neighbors, I remember my own upbringing, and I can remember my mom in particular saying, "Don't ever forget where you came from." I wrote something about that in the book, and this is the part that I'm going to read. And it's really kind of a tribute to my parents. I was born in Banner Elk, North Carolina on July 16, 1951, not because my parents lived there, but because they didn't have access to affordable quality care in the tiny town where they did live, on the other side of the Blue Ridge Mountains, Mountain City, Tennessee. There was no hospital in Mountain City, or the entire county for that matter. My parents, Blaine and Pearl Potter, were born and raised in Johnson County. Mountain City is the county seat. One of the most beautiful places on earth, in my opinion, but where even today it is hard to make a living. There were only two doctors in all of Johnson County when I was born. My mother didn't want either of them to have anything to do with bringing me into this world. She had heard good things about the hospital in Banner Elk, so that's where Dad drove her, over 30 miles of winding, mountainous roads when she went into labor. Affordable quality health care wasn't the only thing my folks didn't have easy access to. Money was another. I've never met a smarter, harder working, and more resourceful man than my dad, but I probably earned more in 1 year at Cigna than he earned in 20, in the 20-some years that he